the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 4341790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guest is brought to the association with the good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify. Just sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
177 for victory. South Africa cooking, good looking at 147 for 4, 15 overs gone. So, 30 runs, 30 balls. You know what? From overs 16 to 19, only 14 runs were scored. And it meant that South Africa needed 16 in the last over, and they only managed 8. And therefore, they lost by 7 runs. We need to discuss this. We need to discuss this on Mason and Guest this evening as to why South Africa choked. They considered chokers, and they did in fact choke. But of course, we want from Kingston, Jamaica, right through to Bridgetown in Barbados to hail India as the winners of the competition. 2007, India, they played against Pakistan, they won. 2009, Pakistan defeated Sri Lanka. 2010, England defeated Australia. 2012, yes, the West Indies, we defeated Sri Lanka. 2014, Sri Lanka defeated India. And of course, 2016, how could you forget that? West Indies win it against England with that stunning performance by Barbadian Carlos Brathwaite. 4 consecutive sixes. And of course, the famous comment coming from Ian Bishop. Remember the name. 2021, Australia defeated New Zealand. And we all know what happened in 2022. A game that really was a bit of a no contest. England, who came here as the defending champions, they defeated Pakistan. And you know what happened a couple of days ago, Saturday to be precise, India defeating South Africa. So it took India a long time, some 17 years, but they're quite happy to have gotten the coup de grace. So we want to congratulate them. I know that they're undergoing a charter back to India. Some challenges in terms of burial. I know that several people are actually trapped here in Barbados. I know that Johnny Grave was trying to get out, the president, the CEO of Cricket West Indies. And Dougal James, who's actually the president of the St. Vincent Cricket Association, he's actually online now with us. He's had some serious challenges. But of course, we also want to talk a little bit later on to the people that matter in terms of the business community. I see Eddie Abed is with us already, and we also want to talk some cricket with Don Topley. So we got a varied program, and we also, of course, got our very special guests in. They're always here with us every week. We're talking about Phil Wallace and Dr. Andrew Ford. And he couldn't make it last week. In fact, he couldn't make it for the last 2 weeks. Mr. Paul Kieran Powell, the West Indies opening batsman. I almost said former, but of course he will sue me if I said that. He is very much with us as well. But just before we do anything, let's go and talk to Dougal James, who is the president of the St. Vincent and the Grenadines Cricket Association. He's entrapped in Barbados. Hello, Dougal. How are you? Dougal. Yeah, Dougal, you're muted. Can you talk to us, please? All right, we seem to have a bit of a challenge with him. So we'll certainly try and maybe give him a little tinkle because he's there. But I mean, what is he doing round off?
Okay, you hearing me now?
Yeah, but we are. I mean, what was the problem, Dougal?
No, I was Get an issue connecting, but I'm okay now.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much indeed. All right, you're trapped in Barbados. When are you going home to St. Vincent? Do you know? The airport is closed.
Well, hopefully the airport should be open by tomorrow afternoon.
How do you know that?
It'll just be me getting a flight out. Well, I was just in conversation with one of the government ministers back home.
Okay. So what about the damage? I understand there's been some damage to the airport. The fence came down due to the wind, and they're very concerned that the animals may go across the runway. Is that true?
Yes. That's the main issue with the airport. The fence is down, but that's been worked on with speed. So by tomorrow, everything should be okay.
Okay. And the under-19 competition was supposed to start today. That's off.
Yeah. Start today is off, but good thing is that there has been minimum damage to the facilities that was scheduled to host matches.
So
damages is one, the manual scoreboard at one gong got some damage, and two gongs got their side screen damaged. And those should be able to, once material is available, back up by end of week.
So you're saying that, because I heard a report from Paul Mears that and I think he was speaking to Mr. Basrat, I think the report originated in Jamaica that this under-19 tournament could be off. Is that true?
Well, what we are looking at so now is that a start next week and change in the schedule from what we might be suggesting from the 3-day round robin to two rounds of 1-day.
Oh.
Over matches.
Okay, so tell us that again.
Because you're supposed to have a round of 3-day plus the 1-day. So we're looking at possibly two rounds of 1-day instead.
I see. And I'm told that the only team to have arrived in St. Vincent would have been the Windward side?
The Windward is there, yes.
I see. All right. Well, Dougal, I wish you well. I know
all
that
the preparations have been made.
So you're confirming that there's a possibility that next week there could be some changes.
Yes.
So just take us through that again. What is likely for next week?
Okay. What it might end up with is that the 3-day round robin format might be scrapped, and you have two rounds of 1-day.
Oh.
50 over matches.
I see. All right, just before you go, Philo.
The hotels to host the teams have not been damaged.
Oh.
Just electricity and water. Mm-hmm. So the hotels are in good condition. Mm-hmm. Just waiting for the power to be back up and water.
What are you hearing coming out of St. Vincent? I understand you got some serious damage there. What are you hearing, Dougal?
Well, there have been damages throughout the country. As a matter of fact, some areas have water and electricity back up already.
That's good news.
So the utility workers are out and know what they have to do and working.
I see.
But the majority of the damage was in the Grenadines. There's an island, Union Island, that's 95% devastated.
Oh,
there was a thousand. And they're advising persons to leave and come to the mainland because there's not enough shelter available to house the inhabitants of the island.
Mm-hmm. Did you suffer any personal damage? Any personal damage you suffered, Dougal?
No. Just power outage.
I see. Water. What part of St. Vincent do you live?
I'm living in Kingston.
Oh, you're Kingston man. All right.
Kingston.
Well, I want to thank you. I don't know, Philo or Dr. Ford, any questions for Dougal before he goes? Philo, anything you want to ask him?
Hi, good evening, Mr. James. Obviously, sorry about your delay in Barbados and obviously getting back in Vincent. Obviously, which airport were you going to be going into?
Argyle International.
That's
the big
one? The new one, yes.
Yes, the big one, yeah.
Okay, and about the under-19s as well. As president of Vincent the Grenadines cricket, wouldn't it be feasible to try to even, you're talking about reducing the three-day games. You don't think for the importance of development of our young cricketers that we can try Cricket West Indies along with yourself, could try to get the three-day competition going and try to minimize the one-day, try to get them to focus on that?
That will be excellent, because that is what is needed in the West Indies right now, the longer version, persons be able to. So that's an excellent idea. That can be considered.
I see.
And end up being the only tournament.
Yeah, because I think the emphasis on the 19s, we're trying to push a lot of white ball cricket into our younger players.
Yeah.
I don't think it is benefiting them. I think that we need to try and push red ball cricket. I don't want to look back. But when I played for Barbados on the 9, it used to be 3-day cricket, a very competitive. Yeah. You could have picked 1-day squads from the 3-day squad. So I don't understand why we keep putting the emphasis on the 9 so heavily on 50-over cricket. So if that's something that your board and CWI can discuss extensively, along with the Cricket Development Committee at CWI, I think that you should try to sell that idea to them. But the players would prefer, I believe, to play a longer format.
Dougal?
Well, I'm a convert to what you're saying, because I believe cricketers first and then adapt. Cricketers should be able to adapt.
I see. All right, Dougal, thanks very much for coming and talking to us. We hope you're able to get out of Barbados. I know you want to stay here, maybe, build a big house and be living here for a little while. I know you love Barbados, but you came for the finals. And
Barbados is not new to me. I've been coming here since 1979. As a matter of fact, I was here in 79 to look at Super Test 3 between Australia and the West Indies in the Packer series.
Really?
I've been coming here a long time.
You've been coming a long time.
Yeah, man.
All right. And you came for the finals, and I'm sure you're quite happy to witness another finals in Barbados.
Yes, I am happy, and the tournament lived up to its name, Out of This World.
Out of This World. Wonderful. Dougal.
One thing I must say, I might get licks to this, but it shows us the difference between batsmen and batters.
Oh, interesting comment coming there from... that's interesting, very interesting comment. All right, Dougal, enjoy the rest of your evening. I hope you get home tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Important to speak to Dougal James at the top of the program. Of course, we got some gentlemen very much like Freddie rearing to go. And we've got Eddie Abed, who we want also to know about. So all well and good to talk about successful tournament. People must put money in their pockets. And we want to know how the business people in Barbados fear. So maybe what we can do, gentlemen, just before we come to you, Eddie Abad has joined us. Hello, Eddie. How are you doing? You're muted, Eddie. Eddie? Doc, can you help him, Doc?
He's on, but his internet doesn't seem to be that, because we can't hear him. Very intermittent.
Something is wrong with your internet, Eddie? All right. We'll try to see if he can...
Not hearing
him, okay, all right.
He isn't muted, sure.
He's not muted, so... Maybe it's an internet problem, you said, Doc, possibly? Eddie?
Well, I'm into medicine rather than IT, I suspect so.
Eddie, one more time. Well, I don't know. I don't know if someone in the back there can help you, but in the meantime, Eddie, we're not...
Can you read lips, Andrew?
Read my lips. Well, at the moment, I think he may just have to ease out and come back. So we'll try and hear him. So, gentlemen, let's focus on the finals. Don Toppin, I know that Don Toppin, a former great journalist there in Jamaica. Don Toppin has joined us. I know you got a big dinner at 7 o'clock. We won't keep you too long. Where did South Africa go wrong in your view? Hello, Don. Talk to me.
Very good evening to you, and a very good evening to everyone across Barbados and the Caribbean. To be brutal, I thought they had a fantastic power play. Maharaj bowled nicely. They got rid of Sharma. But unfortunately for me, Marco Janssen didn't have his greatest day with the ball, possibly at the front end in the power play, but also towards the deck. And I think he cost them a few runs. And unfortunately, it ended up being too many for them. And you talked about 30 or 30, or in old money, 30 runs required of five overs. But two of those were to be bowled by the great Bumrah. And I do think whenever he finishes his career, maybe 5, 8, 10 years, we will look upon as Jasprit Bumrah as one of the great white ball and test ball bowlers. You know, magnificent specimen. What a great performer. He's unique. And he had two overs to bowl of those last five. And really, Bumrah killed South Africa.
Now I want to hear from you in relation to Bumrah. What's so unique about him? Because when you see him bowl, he's stuttering, he looks so not coordinated. What's so special about Bumrah?
Well, it's interesting. When I was in Guyana, I had a fantastic, it would have been great radio to have a conversation with myself and Colin Croft. Now, Colin Croft was a unique bowler.
Yes.
With a totally unique action. Someone like Colin Croft and Jasprit Bumrah. Listen, they probably didn't have a lot of coaching in their youth. They just did what was natural. If they'd have been in Australia or in England, Colin Croft and Jasprit Bumrah would have had it coached out of them because it wasn't according to the local coach book or the local coaching manual. They were unique. For instance, Jasprit Bumrah runs quite quickly off a shortish run, and he almost has a very unique sort of approach, but he sometimes hides the ball. But it's on you. He bowls over 12 o'clock, and he comes from over his head, and he angles it in, and he has a very, very fast arm. Malcolm Marshall had a very, very fast arm. Unlike somebody like myself and maybe Angus Fraser, or Reece Topley, where you see them run in, you see the ball, and it's naturally with long levers, you can anticipate and you can watch the ball all the way to the bat. But someone like Colin Croft, somebody like Jasprit Bumrah, are so damn difficult to watch the ball, to see the ball. One, you've got to focus on it and negotiate it. Two, you've got to execute shots against his unusual style. So it's a double challenge. And not only is it a double challenge, he is so damn accurate. He very rarely gets taken apart down the ground or short or cut. He's just a magnificent bowler, and he's going to be around for an awful long time.
Kieran Powell, you share those sentiments?
Yeah, good night to everyone, all your listening public as well. I think that obviously Bumrah is, as Don said, a very unique proposition. A lot of different moving parts, so you can't necessarily focus or zoom in into a normal box area that you do with most or majority of bowlers. And I think it's interesting because I was having a conversation with Michael Holden yesterday. And he was talking about how he became who he is as a bowler and stuff. And it sort of happens back to conversations that myself and Philo have a lot, actually. Talking about when guys used to play cricket in the streets in the Caribbean or on the beach and that sort of stuff. And as Don rightly said there, like, you get overcoached these days, as opposed to Michael Holden said, like, he got a lot of his discipline, for example, never bowling a no ball, from doing long jump and having to hit that board consistently, because if you go over, it's a foul jump. So that's where certain things like that came in. He could only get a chance to bat if he bowled guys out, because if it was the person that took the catch in the outfield that gets a chance to bat, and he doesn't want to be bowling all day, he wanted a chance to bat. So as you saw in his career, he got a lot of wickets bowled as well. So, you know, it's just different things of how guys are brought up that make them into the players they become. And obviously, Bumrah like maybe someone like a Sunil Narine that we have in the Caribbean that plays a lot of tape ball cricket had a different path or a different trajectory that allows them to be more unique on the international stage.
Mm-hmm. Philo, your assessment, where did South Africa go wrong?
I should say good evening. I didn't say good evening when I first came on. So good evening to the panel and all the listeners. Sherlyn Hart, Carlos and Heaven. I think South Africa, Andrew, were outplayed. I don't think they choked. I think they were outplayed by India. And Jasper Bumrah made the difference. That over that he came back and bowled, that 16th over, after Clarkson took out the spinner, he came back. And I think the key to... I had this discussion with Sir Andy Roberts yesterday because he's unusual. But Sir Andy Roberts pointed out his release point. He has a very good wrist and his release point is accurate. And I think that Jasper Bumrah runs in to bowl a hard length of test match bowling, what they call test match bowling length. And he also swings the ball at pace. And I think that the Indians have worked out that he is a value to them because he bowls fast, accurate, and he swings the ball. And he has this calmness about him that he knows why he is bowling the ball. Rohit Sharma gave him that 16th over because he knew himself that he had to get the wicket. And once Miller exposed Yanton, well, it was ice cream on top of the ice cream. So to me, the Indians kept their calmness. Yes, they were put under pressure, but they knew that once Bumrah could get that wicket, and he Bumrah himself knew that he was going to get the wicket because he had the confidence that they were going to restrict the South Africans to get that total of 176. So I don't think the South Africans choke. I just think that the Indians kept their cool. Sharma led the team well on instinct, and everything fall into place in India, and they ended up eventual winners. Congratulations to them. You also do, I do have to give the ground staff. I thought that pitch was an excellent
pitch. Very good pitch.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I hope that there's something that they can fill on going forward, and I would like to see more green grass on that surface going into four-day cricket, because if it can play so well for T20, I think with grass on it, it will play even better for four-day or five-day cricket. So I thought that India outplayed the South Africans in the latter stages of that T20 game and they ended up victorious. South Africa wanted to win, Andrew. There's no doubt about it. I've never seen so many big men cry. And they're not crocodile tears. They're real tears. They felt hurt. They played unbeaten, similar to India. India played the smarter game on the day and won.
Good comments. Dr. Ford, your assessment? Then we go to Basil. Where did South Africa go wrong, Doc? You were backing them.
Well, good night to our panelists and listeners, and commiserations with all the countries, including ours, that have been damaged and the people that have been displaced by Hurricane Beryl. And also, we have to pray for our brothers and sisters in Jamaica, where it's expected to make landfall sometime later. And, you know, we have to, in spite of being a cricket show, I guess we have to, think of these tragedies and global warming and other things. But getting to the cricket, I think South Africa played a wonderful game for 15 overs. I think they did very well, but I don't think they understood the limitations and the importance of having the two last specialist batsmen at the crease, and 30 balls required just playing as though they were in the middle overs and putting away the bad ball and not losing any confidence or not panicking. And I think if they played like that, they would have sailed home. In spite of Bumrah doing well and bowling two overs, it was Pandeyo who really did the damage in the end. And we know about the break, and we know when Clausen went. And his batting, I must say, he's one of the best power hitters I've seen. And I must commend the final. We didn't see any swiping or any agricultural shots. It was totally cricket. And I think the tournament, as was said earlier, was a tournament for batsmen. And that was really great. But that stupendous catch on the boundary made everyone rise to their feet, because that really, really turned the game and demoralized the South Africans. I think trying to go for that six at that time instead of getting the singles and maybe looking for the boundaries then left the tail terribly exposed.
But wasn't that catch controversial? Have you seen the videos?
No, I
people are saying that
Well, it certainly made shirt made me rise to my feet. I was quite impressed. And that's one of the good things about T20. Fielding has improved a great deal in cricket because of T20. And if that's one of the legacies we can look to, I think that's really great. But if you look at the body language of the fielder as he took it, the euphoria, it was spontaneous. He knew that it was good and that he didn't touch the boundary, and he realized the magnitude of that catch. Because that catch,
but surely can't judge it by his body language or not.
Yeah, but you know, there's some spontaneity and truth that does tell you what's happened, and I was able to see the
some of it could be fake too.
I don't think cameras can be faked. I mean,
no, I'm not talking about the cameras at all.
And you know, we watch. Yeah. you mean the response?
Yes.
The response. Something that spontaneous wouldn't be fake. You
know? Okay.
But it was, you know, it was a good game. It was a good advertisement for cricket, and T20 cricket. And I think in all, the tournament was very enjoyable to me. It was probably the best T20 World Cup
in a long time. I agree. I
watched thus far.
I agree. I see Don has got his hand up. Don, you want to come in?
Yes, just wanted to contribute to that about the catch. It happened, I was at high third man, so it happened really just below me to my left. And both Julia and I had a magnificent view of that catch, and it was a great piece of skill, absolutely superb, marvellous. And just to say that when South Africa were fielding, there were a couple of diving stops close to the boundary. And in one particular case, it moved the boundary back.
Okay.
So later in the game, when South Africa were batting, the boundary wasn't put back. You know, it's been in that boundary position for, 10 days a week? So you could see where the boundary was, and now it had been pushed back by about 8 inches. What I'm about to say is, had the boundary been put back or stayed where it was without being moved 8 inches or so, I am sure that fella, Sky, would have stood on where the boundary rope was. But unfortunately, because when South Africa were fielding, they pushed it, dislodged it, and pushed it back 8 inches. And that is why that catch stood, because the boundary rope or toby rope had just gone back, and therefore he had the space. Had the boundary toby rope not moved, then it would have been 6, because he would have stood on the rope. He would have run out of space.
So Don, you didn't see any controversy with the catch then? You were there. You didn't see anything controversial?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I am comfortable
with the catch.
I note that we haven't had a view from the other side.
And don't you think we should have had a view from the other side?
Don't
you think we should have had a view from the other side?
I am. But we didn't. We weren't offered it. The third umpire wasn't offered it. But I'm comfortable
with the catch.
But if they hadn't slid and moved that boundary in the first innings, I think it would have been 6. He would have trodden on the boundary, but he moved it. The South African fielder moved it, and I do think it may have even coincidentally been Davey Miller.
Oh, no. Basil, I know you've got a different view on this catch.
Good afternoon, Andrew. Good afternoon to the panel. Good evening, I should say, and good evening to your listeners. Before I get to the catch, I just want to review to add in some things. You use the word choke. I don't think South Africa choked. I think one of the things people have not looked. Look at the South Africa team. They only got batting from 1 through 6. After 6,
that's it.
Is your hoping brain? Yeah, from Janssen to Mraz to Rabada, see Shamsi and Narkia. That's who you're coming. I look at all South Africa cricket internationally. God, I follow them closely. None of those guys there, I have hopes in, really hopes in a game to come to bring you through, right? Especially against a bowling attack with the quality of India in a T20 game. I want to say that first. You ask where did South Africa go wrong? Stubbs, de Kock,
yes,
and then Class.
Mm.
All three of those batters got out trying to play high-risk shots when they did not necessarily have to be high-risk shots anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because they played the high-risk shot to get them into that position where they could have played low-risk shots.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, you got to 30 runs, 30 balls, and Stubbs was still batting, or the Cock was still batting, which would have meant you would have had one or two rail batters in the pavilion. So you could have taken, if you wanted to, you had the license to take more risk at that point.
Mm.
But I could tell you, I was on the phone with my brother when it got to 15 overs, 30 and 30. And I said to my brother, these two are the last batters. They got to bat to 19. Because if any one of them gets out,
that's it.
South Africa's in. They're in trouble. And you could think of, look at it. Bumrah bowls that over. He gives up four runs.
Right.
So it goes from, remember it was 26, 26 in four overs.
Right.
He bowls the over. It's up down to 22, right? The 22 runs in three overs. So Bumrah still got an over to bowl, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Three overs. You got three overs, and Bumrah got one. And then you get Patel and Hardik. Now, the over that Hardik bowled, that over that Klassen got out in, sorry.
Right.
That was over South Africa needed to get at least double figures. That would have bring the score down to about 16 in two overs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I might be off on my calculation, the positions of where who was bowling. But what I'm saying is that Bumrah bowled it over. He gave up three runs, right? Or four runs. He still had one more. So you had to take advantage of Hardik Pandya's over, which is where he got Klassen out. That's the over. Klassen and Miller had to get at least 10 to take it from 26 to 16. So they could have then just played around with Bumrah and get another three or four and go into the last two overs to win. And I think with the two of them there, with 12 runs to win, if back in South Africa, that's when you could have really feel more comfortable that a victory was in sight. But they did not get to that point. The minute that Klassen got out, I know South Africa was in trouble.
Oh, dear. What about
the Bumrah left?
What about the catch? What about the catch?
Regarding it, well, actually, one of the replays I saw while they was doing it, I saw his foot touching. It looked like his foot was touching the bottom part of the foam.
Mm.
But I was surprised that we did not get multiple angles and also the magnification of where it looked like his foot appeared to be touching.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised that for a game of this magnitude, a final, I think I would have expected you exhaust all your resources to get it right. Because if indeed it showed that he indeed touched he was touching the thing, South Africa now got 10 runs, 5 balls. We still got an exciting finish because it's Miller facing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that is the weakness of the South Africa team, is that their batting is not long enough. They're one of the top teams in the world that don't have an all rounder that would be that batting resource coming at number 7. Because at India is Jadeja coming at, so you got a man who could really bat, but you can't. There's not West Indies bowling where Jansen's gonna get through.
I like that, and we hit. Yes, McCoy being struck for 6. Phil, was there any controversy about the catch in your view?
Andrew, that catch came a day too late, the review on that catch. I would like to know who's operating the camera that brought the review.
Mm.
Because when you look at appointed umpires and very good umpires, and I can't understand why the television umpire did not ask to have a look at his feet while taking such a close catch to the boundary. That baffled me. But all of a sudden, this video has appeared. But this guy taking the catch, and obviously it's appeared like his left foot has touched the bottom end of the boundary rope. So I don't know, Andrew. I just think that sometimes this artificial intelligence going around and a lot of stupidness is being read out in the world about certain things. Andrew, India won the World Cup.
Right.
And that is how you feel about it.
Okay.
I will have to find out who I want to know which camera that footage came from. And if it's a fan, I want to know how that fan could just be focusing on that man's feet. So I don't understand it, Andrew. I just try to steal off right. my discussion about catch. Australia, South Africa, India have won the T20 World Cup in Barbados. It was a fantastic game. The umpires are going to come to me otherwise. It was a match referee or very old Sir Richie Richardson. I can't see them making such blatant mistake with this, looking at the player's feet. I just don't know, Andrew. I guess when the cricket came off, it was successful. Let's move on. Before I said it, I want to also send my deepest wishes to those people in the region. With these hurricanes that are coming, obviously Barbados, St. Vincent, Caraco, Petit Martin, I think the island off Grenada, St. Vincent. Just 2 weeks ago, Andrew, we had Prime Minister Mia Moore Motley and Honorable Dr. Ralph Gonzalez on this program singing praises about West Indies cricket and being happy. Now they're faced with a battle of expenses. And that is how life turns. You're laughing today and tomorrow you're sad. But let India go home and enjoy the World Cup, Andrew.
Fair enough.
Don't want no kind of problems. So many problems in our cricket. Let the cricket play. The next thing we have to focus on is West Indies, the Test series.
Yeah, that's true. It starts next
which
week.
Which is massive.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Philo.
James Anderson took 7 wickets today at 42 years old. He took 7 wickets today for 42
years old. Preparing for that big Test match. Yeah, preparing for the Test match next week.
But he's retiring.
Yeah, he is. All right, what we're going to do, we're going to pause for business calls. I know that, Don, you've got to go pretty soon, so we're going to let you go. And I certainly want to get some reaction from Kieran in relation to that catch. Mason and Guest, brought in association with our good friends at ASF. We went around the best show of the day.
ASF, white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it down, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, coming up to 6:56. Don, I know you gotta go. I know that Eddie Abed, who's joined us, has got limited time, so we're going to go to him soon. Let's go to you, Karen. Any challenges with the catch? Are you happy with it?
I actually didn't even realize that there was an issue with the catch. I didn't watch the game per se, so I didn't know all of this happened. So I'm just finding out all of this information. I guess I'll have to go and look at the game and obviously look at this point in the game in particular to see. But as Phil already said, that's already gone. It doesn't matter now if it's six or out.
Yeah, India and
have the trophy. Let's, and
let
the
India
most powerful board in the world ain't giving it back.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. Well everything was set up in their favor. I mean, they didn't even play a night game, and they knew, you know, where they were gonna play semifinals and all that. So I mean, yes, they've won, but to me it's almost like having 4 children and you just look after one. Simple. I mean, yes, India's out there, they're doing very well, but what about the other countries, you know? And it's something that I think that those at the ICC will have to sit down and really take a serious look. Don, I know you got to go. Your overall assessment of the tournament, and where did England go wrong, the defending champions, and you're badly beaten? Overall assessment, Don, yeah, before you go.
Well, overall assessment, I think the West Indies can be congratulated for their contribution in providing the services, the hospitality. Listen, I travelled throughout the West Indies and it was an absolute honour, and I really do want to say well done to all the islands. I even ended up in Guyana for the semi-final, which was a very sad day for me. Despite my son out bowling Virat Kohli, and I yelped from the stands, but England were a little bit poor on a couple of the games. I look back at their performance against Australia at Kensington Oval, which was horrid. We then played South Africa, and I thought that was a game. We lost by 7 runs. We bowled double the amount of wides that South Africa did, and perhaps Mark Wood should have done better with that Quinton de Kock drop down on the boundary when he was halfway through his innings. Look, that really, England had a stinker in with the bat against India in Guyana. England were a goodish side, but they weren't consistent, and perhaps we weren't particularly, I suppose the word is stubborn, with the toss. We wanted to chase at all costs. Every time we chased, when we won the toss, we died. And we're not a bad side, but we weren't worthy of reaching the final. But once again, and I do genuinely mean it from the bottom of my heart, I think Barbados can be very chuffed and proud of their contribution in the final. And I'd like to thank everyone throughout the Caribbean for making us so welcome as tourists. There perhaps weren't as many English people here, but there were thousands upon thousands of Indians who have also contributed to your economy.
Indeed. And when do you leave, Don?
We fly technically tomorrow afternoon. We are due to leave Barbados, but you might not be surprised to hear this, that if I got invited to be bumped off, I would dearly love to stay for a few extra days in your beautiful island of Barbados. It would be my pleasure.
And when did they leave Barbados? You know, they left what?
I can tell you this. I was very fortunate to fly back from Guyana on the England plane, which also included India, also included the BCCI officials and the ICC officials. And we flew back not knowing when the England players would go. There is a test match. So when we got off our plane, all of us got off the plane, we followed India off at Barbados at about 12:15 after the semi-final. Certain players had noises on their phone to alert them that they were going home tomorrow. And England originally had the test players flying home on Sunday night, but also 3 others. And Rhys Topley was one of those. So Mum, who picked me up at the airport, gave him a kiss goodnight and goodbye, as he knew he was going home. But I believe there are still a few support staff here.
Ooh.
India only got away last night on a special charter flight. And I believe South Africa did get away after the day after the final. So most have now left. There's a few supporters who are and journalists who are having to stay the rest of the week to pick up flights back home to England after the weekend because of the hurricane. And of course, our thoughts go out to everybody. I travelled around Barbados today and I was shocked to see all the sand on the Highway 2 on the West Coast and certain areas where they've locked bits of the road. And I obviously am aware that on the South Coast, many lost fishing boats and the fishing industry might be affected. And really our hearts go out to them. And we hope and genuinely pray that everybody is safe.
Any final question or comment in relation to what Don said? Philo or Dr. Ford, before he goes? You want to ask him anything, Doc?
Well, Chris, that semi-final game in Guyana. Obviously, England. Where do you think England went wrong in that semi-final game? Seeing that both teams were obviously evenly matched. Where did it?
Maybe. I mean, they've got form. Perhaps we didn't have as much form going into it. But look, we've got to be honest, Philo. England played Australia, They won the toss. They bowled, they chased, and died. We lost against South Africa where we won the toss. We bowled, we chased, and we didn't quite get over. And then India again, we won the toss. You know, we've been done quite lucky to win those tosses. We won the toss, we bowled, and they got 25 too many, perhaps. But we chased and we died again. Look, I probably would say, and I'd have to say, stick my heart out and say, look, we probably aren't particularly flexible. You know, good old-fashioned cricket, we're not reinventing the wheel here. In a semi-final pressurised game, would runs on the board be good for England? Perhaps. Mm. But we love to chase. We don't seem to be flexible enough to do anything else but. They're very stubborn in some of their outlooks.
Mm. But obviously, they didn't board Moeen Ali as well. What are you talking about?
Well, exactly, you know. Perhaps there was a time, Jofra, I thought, Archer bowled well at the front. I thought Reece bowled really well. We had them a little bit under pressure. And then, you know, I'll tell you what they did do, and I looked at this. There's a lot of last balls that the lads bowled in the middle overs where we bowled not a bad over, but we couldn't get out of it. The boundary, a four or a six in that final ball, cost us. And, you know, maybe it's a bit of a gamble on Indians' part, but it worked. And our bowler didn't get out bowling a dot ball or going for one or two with that final ball. Perhaps that cost us too. There were some calamities with the batting, if we'll be honest. Some of the shots, some of the shot selections, a schoolboy run out, Moeen Ali's. There was Livingston's run out. Butler played the reverse sweep. Phil Salt got out to Bumrah. A lot of people get out to Bumrah. But we didn't look good with the bat. And I just wish we batted first on that day, on that morning in Guyana. But alas, we weren't good enough.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, well, Don, before Don goes, I mean, we've had a good World Cup. You've been here, and thanks for being a part of it. But we've seen the three retirements from India. You have Rashid and Ali and maybe Butler. Do you see this as a changing of the guard for many teams going forward?
Yeah, I think you might be right. I mean, Warner's going to go, isn't he, at Australia? Yes. We're seeing New Zealand lose Kane Williamson, maybe Trent Bolton, maybe Southie. Listen, I think you're absolutely right. We're seeing the changing of the guard because some of those world-class, well-renowned players are probably going to disappear and play franchise, so we're not going to lose them completely, but you're probably right. Bairstow, has he played his last game for England? Moeen Ali probably has. Mm. Will Mark Wood play white ball? Will he just concentrate on red ball? So you're probably right that we've come to an end of an era where we're going to lose a few players from international cricket. I agree.
Well, you know, Don, a lot of West Indians don't like to retire, but I would think that some would have to retire. I mean, Doctor, don't you think so? I mean, these people have announced their retirements. I mean, don't you think that Russell should have said something by now? And some of the others? Doc?
Yeah, well, definitely, I think our 30, our mid-30 players, you know, Russell and Charles and some of the others who may not have made it. Mm. It's time to move forward. And T20 cricket is a young man's game.
What about Jason Holder? No.
Well, Jason is still a bit young, but you see what's happened. We've had to...
I'm not hearing you well, Doc. What about Jason Holder?
He's getting there for sure. He's getting there for sure.
Do you think he should retire, Doc? Jason Holder?
Jason is probably only 32 or so, so he may have three more years left.
So the answer is no.
But, I mean, you may look at Roach at 36 getting the injury.
Yes.
You know, there's some players that definitely have to ponder the future, but I think if we are to have continuity, just like other countries that are successful, I think we have to definitely start to chart a course. Look at what the CPL brings later on. And the CPL, you know, we may have criticized it for many things and criticized our services, but I think One thing this World Cup shows is that we have to really pick batsmen
for
T20 cricket and try to get away from the people who slog. I mean, I looked at Clausen and I was really impressed with the way he batted. Just raw power, but with technique.
Oh, he batted very well.
We have to
batted extremely well.
Look for players like that. And we have to look for quality all-rounders that can do more than one thing. Mm-hmm. So being able to have more than one skill will be important. I see Basil has his hand up.
Right.
I wanted to say what the president of the St. Vincent Cricket Board said. I think he got to correct the term. The World Cup showed there's a difference between batters and hitters.
Mm.
Right? All the hitters were from wanting... in this world.
Oh, well said.
All of them.
Well said. Well said. I like that.
And that is the thing I most enjoyed about this World Cup. Because finally in T20 cricket, we saw a legitimate battle between bat and ball. And that is what cricket is supposed to be, regardless of form. Battle between bat and ball. Now where guys, ordinary batters could stand up and hitting some of the best bowlers in the world, the all-pars without the wicket is like a rule.
Andrew, can I just contribute one thing there? Just one thing.
Sure.
We're talking about a trend today where the youngsters hit the ball hard and batters and batsmen. Listen, the player of the match in the grand final at Kensington Oval was no other than Virat Kohli.
Mm.
And he basically didn't slog it. He played good old-fashioned cricket shots.
Mm.
So, listen, let's never forget, the game is moving quickly, but there's still a place for a chap who plays proper, old-fashioned, smart cricket shots.
Mm-hmm.
Don, that shall be my last word.
Don, I want to thank you very much indeed for being very much a part of the Mason and Guest family. Of course, you did some good radio commentary as well. They enjoyed your commentaries, Don. You got 10 out of 10. Don?
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. Listen, I must just say a quick hello or goodbye to Margaret, who's been a great friend of us up at Royal Westmoreland, but also to the crowd, the crew that man the North Stars Cricket Club in St. Lucie.
Wonderful.
I was with them today. I had a lovely afternoon with them. And can I just give a shout out to North Stars Cricket Club?
Oh, wonderful. Out of St. Lucie. Thanks very much indeed, Don Topley, for coming and talking to us. Heading to 11 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock. When we come back, we're going to certainly talk to Eddie Abad. I hope that everything is good with you now, so we can have a little chat with you. And we also want to get an Indian perspective. And we've also got a gentleman who cannot see. He's very much with us, and he's going to be giving you a very interesting perspective when we come back. Of course, Missing Guests, Broadden Association, with our good friends at ASFE, where I'm the best show of the day.
ASFE, like rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
A very good evening to everybody. I'm Ken Husbands, and it is not customary for you to hear me, especially sure enough that I am the person in charge and not Andrew. But no, I just want to say a good evening to the regular crew, fellow, Dr. Lord, and
Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
You need help, Ken.
Yeah, I do. I do. And
there's also another doctor there who's come on, Dr. Nitish Mehta. Say hello, doctor. And he's an oncologist. Do you think you need his services?
No. Dr. Lord keeps me in good condition.
say hello to Dr. Nitish.
Dr. Nitish, good evening to you, sir. Now, I took over the microphones to do something that is not customary amongst my people.
Mm.
My people do not know what it is to compliment each other.
Right.
Now, when you sit back in the audience and you see someone performing on stage, you get a feeling of adulation. You get a feel of, but that is my uncle. I know him. That's KNR. That's my uncle. Much less when you work with that person. I sat back in my home, the comfort of my home, and then on my radio, and I heard this Andrew Mason, this, let me say, this little black boy from Barbados, Andrew Mason, I mean, just hailing it out. Voice undulation, perfect. Choice of words, perfect. References, perfect. Breathing, perfect. And I thought that that is the quintessence of good broadcasting. And I want to say to you, I have to change the vernacular because the English language is rather inadequate. So, Andrew, I want to say to you, Magna Cum Laude. Philo knows what I mean. He does not. Magna Cum Laude. And when one heard you, they would relate to Basil Butcher. I just heard Basil say there's a difference between backers and hitters.
Yes.
There's a difference between talkers and broadcasters and commentators.
Right, indeed.
Magna Cum Laude, my friend.
Thank you very much indeed.
I commend you.
I appreciate it. I thought the team did a very good job. Dr. Mehta was also part of that commentary team as well. And, you know.
Really nice.
In fact, one of the things that Barry said to me before the start, he said, Andrew, it's important that we have very good commentary. And I mean, people like Henry Wallace and, of course, Jamal Smith were very much a part of the team. Dr. Mehta was also part of the team as well. And I really thought that the guys really stepped up. We had some very good comments across the Caribbean. I thought we actually did a very good job in terms of commentary.
But this is a very strange thing, Andrew. That everybody, as if with one voice, thinks, well, it really didn't matter. We had such a good time. It didn't matter who won the match.
Right, absolutely.
It didn't matter.
Absolutely.
Everybody enjoyed the match.
Indeed.
All the territories, the hosts,
yes.
We're happy to have you all.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter who won the match. And I think for the Caribbean, again, we are happy. We are happy. I have spoken, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed. Very well said. I see Basil has got his hand up. Basil?
Why wasn't the commentary available in the United States? Wow. We couldn't access it.
Well, of course, I think it was geo-blocked. You would have to go directly to a station. You're talking about the West Indies YouTube channel. You're talking about the West Indies
YouTube channel, yes.
Right. Well, it was geo-blocked. Yes. So therefore, it was entirely for the region. Oh. So it meant that if you wanted to hear the comment, you'd have to maybe tune to one of the local stations carrying it. It's a very good question you're asking. And maybe when I speak to Johnny Grave, I'd have to ask him, because I know that several people wanted to hear the broadcast outside the Caribbean.
Yes, I like to hear y'all bands on the radio.
Yes, indeed.
It is much more enjoyable than on the TV.
Indeed. Eddie Abel is with us. Eddie, I know that you got to go very quickly. Can you talk to us now? Hello, Eddie. Have you solved your problem?
I believe so. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Perfect.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me, Eddie?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. How did the businessmen...
Yes.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about, you know, people coming into Barbados, of course. How did the businessmen fare in terms of the World Cup? Did you make lots of money?
It shouldn't come as a surprise that there were absolutely two ends to the spectrum. Those of us who sold general merchandise did not do very well. The World Cup gave us nothing, especially in Bridgetown. We had hoped that some of the millions that had been spent on Kensington would have act as a catalyst to the Bridgetown commerce, but it really didn't. We were hoping for better signage, perhaps even public toilets. We were hoping for better lighting in the city. One felt that people might take public transportation and then would traverse the city over to Kensington, and you should put the necessary in place. None of that was done. We were promised many, many things would try to be accomplished with the money that was being spent, and it wasn't. What I will tell you is those who sold alcoholic beverages and food had a phenomenal June. The days that there was no cricket, They did well the days that there was cricket in other territories. They put up big screen TVs and patrons came and spent money. So it really was two different worlds. Depending on which world you were in, you had different results. But Bridgetown as a venue, Bridgetown as a conduit to get you to Kensington, did not do well.
Mm. Did you share these concerns with those responsible?
Through the chamber, we met with the city planner, or the city manager, pardon me, originally, and spoke at length about, he had certain aspirations as well, and I dare say that he was unable to get a lot of what he wanted done, put in place. But we came together as all stakeholders, discussed what we thought would have been best, what we'd wanted to do. Many of us had our own promotions in place, which we ran, but the city just was not as inviting as it could have been. You know, the one day, and this may prove my point, the one day that we did very well was the day that England played Scotland, and okay. It was rained out. Those patrons who were at the Oval sort of just walked into town because they had nothing else to do, and they shopped. That was the absolute best day that we had. Many of us were hoping for shopping after the World Cup was over, and Beryl came and kind of spoiled that as well, so that didn't help. Look, there's no question in my mind that many people came in for World Cup. Whether it was Airbnb or whether it was a hotel, guest house, they were occupied. Was there a spin-off to sort of vindicate those who had spent the money at Kensington? I think so. We'll only find out later on through the various tributaries how the money was spent. Was it spent on general merchandise? No. Was it spent on food and drink? Absolutely. Other venues, I understand bars and clubs did very well as well. So, yes, the money was spent. The bigger question has to be, and sadly, I'm a novice when it comes to the cricket question as compared to your other panelists. The question will have to be, the money that has been spent, can Kensington ever hope to give a return on that investment? And I would be keen to know about that, because the venue can be used for so much more. And I'm not a purist to say that the pitch can't be touched, but I've known enough and I've read enough to know that there's such things as dropping pitches now. I just don't know if we're going to be doing that, if the venue will be used for other large crop over events, or when we have artists coming in from overseas, because it can hold 28,000 people now. It's a huge venue. We just needed to put it to work to give us a return.
Doc or Phil, any questions for Eddie?
Eddie, I mean, I know you did mention that, I mean, what's happened, but, you know, the visitor that comes in for cricket, you had mostly Americans, less people from the UK, maybe some Caribbean people, and, you know, those individuals, as far as department stores are concerned, they get cheaper goods, better quality, so we wouldn't really expect them to come into the store. I think some of the things you mentioned had to do with maybe facilities in the city for general purposes, but do you think that a focus for cricket, there's room to do those things if we're focusing on an event that was just a month long?
I kind of feel that we've gotten to the stage now in 2024 where we have to be big boys and big girls when we're spending taxpayers' money. And there needs to be a positive spin-off. There needs to be something that we can say, well, cricket acted as a catalyst to get business in Bridgetown, which I must tell you is on its back as a venue, as a location. It could have helped us. There were many people that came through town, but candidly, they came through town at 12:30 at night. No business is going to be remain open until 12:30 at night. A lot of the matches were designed for the viewing public overseas, and I get that. when you have TV rights as large as they are, you have to cater to that market. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that we didn't do enough to attract that consumer, that person who said, had we turned Broad Street into a cricket pitch, mm-hmm. and put benches out there and said it's a day that people who come to cricket can come into Broad Street, the busiest street in the city, mm. and bowl a ball or drink a beer, I think it would have attracted people. It just seems to me that Kensington was sort of put into its own world and the constitution was that, and mm. everybody else had to fend for themselves.
Yeah, but what's the real responsibility though of department stores and other people as a group to do the marketing that they need to do to benefit from such an endeavor? I mean, the cricket is more about in this situation is more about people coming in, staying at hotels, having drinks, seeing the island, doing other things, but as a group, the stores in town, if they wanted to benefit from the World Cup, so, like an initiative, like you said, is something that the group would have to get together and do. Is it that the government has to put things in place for a group that's you know, private sector, or is it that the private sector has to get together and really do things to help themselves? But the truth is, the sustainability of the private sector is really local commerce. So anything that you guys do has to involve locals as well as individuals that come in. But what, as a group, did the private sector do to try to make use of this 1 month of exposure and all these other people that came in?
So, just to clarify, Duty Free Caribbean, which are in fact the new owners of the old Cape Shepherd, will tell you that 75% of their turnover goes to tourists. They're not at all interested in local consumer. They're selling fragrances. They're selling durables that are all targeted to that consumer from overseas. So to make the point, the blanket statement, are we interested in local market as a group of merchants and retailers in Bridgetown is not altogether accurate. I started off by saying that there were many discussions that were held with all stakeholders. We're fortunate now that we have a city manager. We're fortunate now that Noah Lynch used his great knowledge as the person who would head up the task of redoing Kensington to meet with not only the chamber, but the various merchants. And we had spoken to several members in government as to what was needed, what could we expect, how best we could go about doing this. And the number one thing that kept coming back over and over, to your point, was not what could the private sector do, but where would the money come from? Mm. And government said that they wanted to make Bridgetown the shining example of what Kensington was. Let us not forget, we went about as a country not only to polish and shine all of the old silver we had, but to make it as attractive to everybody, the world stage, as we could. And you could not separate Kensington from Bridgetown. The two are twin, they're side by side. So we were going to present this beautiful image, all of the empty shops on Broad Street, and believe you me, there are many, would have murals on the front of them. So you wouldn't see empty spaces. All of the uneven sidewalks would be even so nobody could trip and fall. They would beautify the city with putting in plants and foliage. Some of it was done, not a lot. Signage was going to be very important, and it would be done bearing in mind that we have this wonderful link to our past. And of course, most importantly, the city was uninviting because it was not bright enough at night when cricket would be over. Public facilities were put in place. They were going to do pop-up little things all along the sidewalks and the streets to encourage tourists. None of this happened.
Mm.
So I'm making the point, and I'm not pointing fingers. This cannot be a discussion about pointing fingers. None of it happened because either time got away, either the emphasis was we need to do more with Kinston, or generally the private sector just didn't push hard enough. But I will tell you independently, many of us in the private sector did do what we thought was necessary to attract people to our shops. Lots of us decorated our show windows with cricket paraphernalia, memorabilia. We went out and did things to try to get people into the stores, souvenirs. Mm. We did try to attract. But what became very clear, to your point, is that the type of person coming to a country for cricket is not interested in general merchandise. He really isn't. For whatever reason, he's just not interested. So a lot of it is that we felt, and we're now doing postmortems, is that anything that was perhaps pushed in that direction was not enough to attract them. Perhaps it should have been done to create events in the city to get people into the city. And it's, you know, we can only sit there now and say should have, could have, would have. And we'll learn from this and move forward. I, for one, will tell you, I'm a proud Barbadian of what was done at Kensington. I still, as I say, would like to see a return on that investment down the road in other means. But truthfully, in terms of saying, trying to spin World Cup cricket, that there would be spin-offs for the private sector, no, that never came to fruition. Mm. Some did in food and drink, but generally others didn't.
Mm. I see. Well, Eddie, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Very interesting. We're going to try and get a reaction, of course, from Mr. Noel Lynch. Time is very tight, but I'm sure we're going to try to hear from him. But we want to thank you for coming through and talking to some Mason and guests.
Thank you very much. I have to run off to another engagement. Thank you to the panel, and keep up the good work, everyone. I thoroughly enjoyed what I heard tonight.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now.
Right. Okay, the lines are open, 441790. Can we pause for business calls now, Ken?
Oh, sure, of course.
We don't want to get into any trouble. All right. Mason and guests, brought in association with our good friends at ESFE Workroom, the best show of the day.
ESFE, the white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESFE is the best show of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want.
All right, 7:31, the country. Let's go and take a call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Hello, welcome. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Andrew.
Yes, you're live.
Yes, sir. What?
You listen to your radio's caller. Just talk to him on the telephone. Don't be distracted.
Yeah, Andrew, one point I want to make with you is when you're good at something, you're good at it. Now, check Mason and guess you. Number one show, whatever. All of your guys are on top. All of your guys know the game or whatever. I find that you push into India, as far as India is concerned, how they're looking after their own. When you're number one, you look after your own.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about other people.
You matter about other shows?
No. I'm asking you. I'm asking you. Does it matter with other people?
Yeah, well, we had most of our games at night.
Right.
Which I thought was wrong.
Right. And you heard Eddie Abed said that it caused them some, in terms of getting people to come, traffic throughout Bridgetown was limited because of that.
We had to go to
finals at 10:30 on a Saturday in the morning.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
India didn't play any matches at night.
Right. I find West Indies.
So, Carl, I'm just responding to what you said earlier. Do you have a response to what I just said?
That what?
You didn't hear what I said then. I use examples.
West Indies matches were at night.
Mm-hmm.
West Indies USA match should have been in the day.
Yeah. And the 8:32 at night is a little late to me, actually. It's a little late. Yeah. It means that when you have a match at 8:30, you get home at what, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Why couldn't you have the game at 7 o'clock?
At West Indies, USA match was earlier. Bridgetown would have had some.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah. I agree with you, caller. Thanks for your contribution. Let's stick a couple of calls in. We got Dr. Mehta. And Ken Crafton has joined us as well. You know, this show is a very varied show. We want to find out from him what's been happening with the pitches. The pitch at Kensington Oval for the finals was a good one. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Miss Peter, Mason and guests.
Yeah, you're live on Mason and guests, sir.
Hello.
Yes, stop listening to your radio. You're getting confused. I can hear the radio in the background.
Okay. Can you? Is it okay now?
Yeah. Talk to us. Where are you calling from? What part of Barbados?
Christchurch.
Okay. Wonderful. Hello to Christchurch.
What are you going to ask you? You're always well on it. And he was listening for you to speak about the wrestling in two matches at the loss. Because I saw that we could have done a lot better against England and the other team.
Yes.
Basket
against South Africa and England, yes.
With basket, could have done a lot better.
Well, people are beginning to question whether the captain should actually make the team, given his recent poor form.
That's why they you, you know, because you're so true.
Well, I mean, you know.
That's what's going to find out where you didn't mention about the captain.
Yes. He struggled. In fact, if Dr. Ford brings a stop on the captain, it wouldn't inspire confidence.
Yes. But the next thing is that, Andrew.
Yes.
The show two replays on that catch.
Yes.
And the sharp feet never touched the boundary.
He never touched?
No.
So you were happy with the catch?
Yeah, they showed the feet.
Okay. So no challenges with the catch?
Yeah, not with me.
Not with you at all.
But it's all, look, we need to get people that understand cricket, man.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. I hope to come in Christchurch and meet you. Are you in Christchurch South, by the way, with our good friend Mr. Ralph Thorne?
Yes, my good friend.
Oh, you're in Christchurch South?
Yes.
Okay, what part of Christchurch South are you?
I'm in Oystens.
Oystens. Have you ever met Ralph Thorne?
Oh, yes, that's my friend.
He's your friend? All right. He's still your friend?
Yes.
All right, good.
Okay.
I know Ralph listens to this show quite often. So, Ralph, you got a friend there. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good night.
Yes.
Good night, how you are?
Yeah, fine.
Andrew, I want to get to the dock.
Yes.
And Doc,
I
hear Andrew asked. Doc, Andrew asked you a question to make about Jason Holder. I find out that you are.
Yeah.
Andrew, you hear me?
You go and talk to Doc. That's your
question. Doc. Andrew asked you a question. Hello?
Yes, ask Doc the question.
Andrew asked you a question about Jason Holder. And I find out that you've been dodging a lot of questions. It's time that you come out and explain it your hand. Because Jason Holder right now, as you covering up, but don't cover up because the public want to hear the truth from you. And the next thing is, I told Andrew a couple months, even before the World Cup,
right.
going back to Charles R. Russell, be going backward.
Mm.
Once you went backward, You got a lot of fresh players now.
Right.
But then the spirit that the young children get for Hedman says, then take up. Right? But I finish. I want to know, right? What the problem? Charles played with 5 or 6 games. And then we're going to bring in Kyle Mills to play in 1 game. I want to know the reason why you're going to drop Charles at this point in time.
You didn't think Charles should have been dropped? He had a couple of good scores, you're right. He had a couple of good scores.
But check this here now. Cody had four that fight that.
And they're still playing.
and the captain playing. And you see what he do?
Yeah, he made 7 sixes in
come on, yeah. Come on.
But surely you wouldn't pass. You wouldn't put Charles and Cole in the same pot, would you?
No, I end up in the same pot. End up, I would do that. That's like putting a horse against a donkey.
Ooh.
Right? But when you tell you now,
right?
People when we play against South Africa, I just survived who get you first over?
Yeah.
Right? Then Perrin come at 3.
Right.
Take it over. Perrin ain't seen what in my bowling.
Right.
He cheated in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody call it there. Mm-hmm. Right? The next one is then, the captain coming, he ain't what going on, and he do the same right thing. But the most important that I get in that, why did Russell 18 overs and 5 balls and 1 ball with 20th over, Russell ran the 6 ball, and then the next over, Russell Ron forced a single to get the strike.
Right.
I do something what you may have to do.
Yeah, okay, we'll get
I do something wrong with this man's head.
Right.
I need the word that I didn't finish here now. The word that I fear. Perrin, the captain, Mears.
Just be careful. Caller, just be careful. Yes. Just be careful.
Yeah,
Watch your conduct.
No. Yeah, Chase and Russell.
Right.
Them should pay the people the money that they come to watch them maybe right. Be able to get help.
All right. Thank you very much indeed. Right. The Dr. Nitish Mehta is with us. Of course, he's a journalist. And where are you now, Doc? Are you back in Chicago? I know you were here. You were part of the commentary team.
Chicago.
How are you doing?
Chicago, Andrew. I was able to successfully avoid the storm and the hurricane that invaded the beautiful island of Barbados.
Yes. How was your experience in Barbados?
Absolutely wonderful. It was stunning. I was in the commentary booth with one gentleman who's wearing a lovely yellow shirt at the moment, who's got headphones on his head and waving at everybody right now. So I was in great company with Andrew Mason and doing commentary with good people like you and Barry. It was a wonderful experience. I hope you enjoyed having me.
Oh, yes, indeed. Of course, we did, yes.
And talking about the experience of the whole World Cup, it was basically 32 days, 11 flights, 6 different hotels. And at the end of the day, India wins the T20 ICC trophy at the lovely Kensington Oval. So if you talk about everything came together on the 29th of June.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 30th of June, before the rain god started showering on Barbados, I was out of there. But there were some logistical travel issues, which can happen anywhere. It's nothing unique to the West Indies. It can happen in the US or India, anywhere you are.
Mm.
Everybody likes to become a Monday morning quarterback. That we should have done that, we should have done that. But whatever was done was in the big interest, in the great interest of the fans. And the Indian fans who traveled not only from India, from the US and Canada, I met a lot of them. And they've had tremendous time in all the islands. I met them in Antigua, I met them in Barbados, even St. Lucia. I was there in Guyana. In fact, when I was in Guyana, I met a lot of people. In fact, I was with the Prime Minister of Guyana.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I saw the picture. Mm.
There was a special event and I met quite a few people there during that particular function and the experiences they had at different venues. And I was able to get kind of a thumbnail sketch of this entire tournament that was encompassed in over 29, 30 days. And everybody I spoke to, they obviously loved the island, the people of the West Indies. Mm. Their hospitality. So, if from my standpoint, other than some logistical issues about travel and all that, there was really no problem at all. And going back to that catch when the caller called about Surya Kumar Yadav, whether he touched the ropes or not, Sean Pollock himself, who was the commentator from South Africa, great South African fast bowler himself, has said that when he looked at it very carefully from the commentary booth that there was a, it was a genuine catch. And of course, a catch that won India the match. I mean, the common adage that we have, catches win matches, it could not be any more true than what Surya Kumar Yadav demonstrated on that day when he took the catch to dismiss David Miller. But the Indian fans, you know, Indian fans go wherever the Indian team goes. No matter where India plays, whether it is in Timbuktu or whether it is in Barbados, Indian fans will flock the stadia all over the world. And the commitment that they have to their team, whether they win or lose, is unparalleled in when you look at any cricket playing nation in the world. Unparalleled. I mean, yes, the West Indians love their team, the English people love their team, so do the Aussies. But when it comes to pure madness, the word is madness I would use, that they have for their team, it is the folks from India. And there are so many people who have left India, like myself. I have lived in Chicago for the last 40 years practicing oncology and hematology, but yet my love for cricket has not diminished one iota. So there are a lot of people like myself who are casual cricket fans, serious cricket fans, if you will, but their commitment to supporting the team has been absolutely brilliant.
Wonderfully said. All right, Doc, I know you have a question or two, but let's go to Ken Crafton. Time flies so very quickly. The man in charge of the pitches across the region. Ken, how are you, sir? Ken Crafton. Just trying to see if he can get a quick... He'll be very keen.
Hi, Andrew.
Yeah, hi. How are you, Ken?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, Andrew.
Okay, where are you? What part of the world are you now?
I am in Antigua now. I'm waiting for a flight back home in St. Lucia tomorrow evening.
Right, I see. All right. Were you satisfied with the pitches generally, Ken?
Generally, I would say at some venues, I was extremely happy. Others, not so much so.
All right. What do you think went wrong?
There were a number of reasons. First of all, we entered a very strange weather pattern in April, even March, April, especially in some of our islands. It was an extremely hot and dry period. But I must say, we all went for that period as strong as we can in terms of getting our operations done. All the venues, we put in the work that was needed in terms of rehabilitating our squares and getting them up to scratch. And I think generally we were quite ready. So certain things didn't work according to plan based on what I would see could have been the management of our squares during that long period.
Oh.
And I think it was one of our shortcomings.
I see. What about the drop-in pitches?
Well, I wasn't part of that. Those pitches were in New York, and I wasn't part of it.
Okay, you just dealt with the West Indies?
Yes.
The pitch for the semifinals, though, Afghanistan playing against South Africa, seemed a bit of a strange one at the Brian Lara Stadium. Could you explain? I mean, it looked so strange to me.
Yeah, it was strange. There were a number of cracks. The pre-preparation wasn't done according to our plan.
Okay.
And it was just a little too dry when the preparation started.
Philo, any questions or Doc for Ken?
I'm very keen on pitches because actually today I went to the Kia Oval to watch Surrey versus Essex. Took a photograph of that pitch, and the square is full of grass. Good evening, Ken. I noticed it at the Narasami Cricket Stadium. Your square is full of green grass. My question to you is, how do you keep your square green and prepare your pitch with live grass? And in some of the other territories, particularly Barbados and Kensington Oval, their square is brown, which tells me that it's dead grass. what is the procedure that you use to keep your square so large green and prepare to each of the pitches with big bumps?
Absolutely.
And Gary and Pace. And we can't seem to mirror that in Barbados, for example. As Antigua didn't play too badly until something went wrong there. But what is the secret to keeping your squares green and preparing your surfaces for that live green grass?
Okay, Philo, good question. The whole idea is managing the square, and this is so important. We all had fully grassed prior to the World Cup. I mean, all the squares in the region were fully grassed. And what we encourage is to have a very good, strong root system leading up to preparation. Because during preparation, you actually abuse your grass and do everything that it doesn't like. You cover, you roll, you starve it of water. So before we do the preparation, as I said, we get it as strong as possible. So that's one. Second, during the course of your tournament, you need to keep on putting water on that block. You need to manage your square. Covering also, excessive covering would cause you to lose your grass or lose your grass very, very, very quickly. So covering, our covering would be done only when needed. We'd start our preparation 10 days before the game, and we would definitely manage our covers. So we'd take our covers off in the morning before the sun gets out, and only cover on an evening when the sun goes down. And during the day, if we have rain, then we'd do the short covering and exposing back the pitch. So this is key. Keeping the grass as healthy and as strong as possible during preparation period.
Doc, anything for Kent before he goes? I know he's busy preparing to get home.
I guess for Kent, the question is, looking towards the future when we actually do get the drop-in pitches, and you know, over the life of a pitch, you may have to remove a part of the surface and resurface it a little bit and do further preparation of it. How do you see your methods now changing when you get drop-in pitches from made in other places?
I honestly think drop-in pitches may not be the answer. I think we are quite capable and able to use our traditional methods and prepare proper cricket pitches. It's just some more of a commitment and some more support and getting some equipment that we would need to facilitate that process.
Let's see.
Do you... I guess has his finger up. And...
Yeah, Dr. Mehta. You have a question for Ken?
I have a question for Mr. Crafter. So the pitches in New York came under a lot of criticism that perhaps did not have enough time to get acclimatized to the weather conditions in New York. Now looking back, the pitch curator from Adelaide, Damien Huff, who was in charge, looking back as yourself who knows a lot about pitches, what could have been done differently so that the New York would have been a bit different? I mean, looking back, this is, of course, we are using the retrospectoscope to look back, what could we have done differently? And if you were to advise to the ICC or the authorities that might be, what would you recommend?
Well, for sure, it's very difficult for me to make a pronouncement when I wasn't there to actually see the end result. But I did see those pitches in Florida when they were under construction. They were fully built and they were grassed when I saw them. And they looked level and they looked good. The only issues we have with pitches is that the grass we use on those pitches the grass has to be thinned and light. I'm not sure how much that was done. I'm not sure how thin that grass was. But you don't want no cushion of grass on your surface. You want it to be light and thinned out. I cannot make any pronouncement. I didn't see the final product. So that could have caused the problem. I know the pitches were leveled. I know they were flat. So I'm not sure. I cannot pinpoint on any one reason why the pitches would have played that way.
Basil?
My question is along the same lines. I saw a video, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, that those pitches were prepared in Florida in the outdoors, not indoors like they would do in Australia. Would that have played a role in how they were? Because why I asked this, several years prior, when we had this Masters tour here in the United States where they played these matches at baseball stadiums and they had a drop-in pitch. I went to the game in New York and that pitch played really well, right? Nothing like what we saw in the World Cup. So I was wondering, and that pitch was shipped directly from Australia. So my question is, do you think the preparation of the pitches outside in Florida may have played a role in how they fared when we saw them in New York?
I really don't think so. According to our construction of pitches, the only difference we had with those dropping pitches was that the grass that was used on those pitches was not the Bermuda grass which we normally use on cricket pitches.
Oh.
It was more like So that could have been a reason. I cannot pinpoint, as I said, because I don't have all that information, but I know for sure the grass was different. Mm. But I don't think that a dropping pitch constructed months ahead of the tournament would have been the failure. No, I don't think so.
Oh, I see.
But the ICC will clearly look at what happened in New York. And of course, now the whole stadium is dismantled. It was only a modular stadium that was meant only for the few games that they played. I think a total of 6 games they played in New York. And now it's back to the usual park. But ICC will definitely do a study as to what we did right, what we did wrong, and learn from any potential mistakes that they may have made moving forward. Don't you think so?
Yes, of course. There is need for review and going forward so that we could have a better model going forward.
Hold on. Do you want to ask you a question? How long would it take a surface to settle after being relayed?
Good question. Ken?
Okay. I can tell you from my experience, my share experience, in relaying a surface, the main thing you need to get after your relaying is for your grass to get established. And 10 weeks after the relaying, your grass would have grown properly with a good root structure, and you could be ready to prepare a pitch weeks after that. So let's say 3 months after relaying, your pitch should be in an ideal state for preparation. And I'm telling you, they shouldn't have any issues with that, excepting you should get more consistency in your surface. Because the whole idea of relaying is to clean out and to improve your surface. Over years of usage, your grass within that soil profile would die, and you would have buildup of organic material in that soil profile. So what you do after a few years, after 10 or 12 years, you strip out that upper layer, which we'd consider to be contaminated and not as pure and strong, remove that upper layer and replace it with fresh soil. And then you grow grass in that, and you should be able to get good results after that operation.
Well said, Ken. We're going to certainly have you back again.
I just wanted to add this. I think that ground is still going to be in place. It's just the stadium that was removed.
Oh, interesting.
So the pitches and the still there. Yes.
No, actually, no, that is not true, Mr. Butcher. The pitches were going to be removed and
what I was told by the CWI vice president.
Oh, I see. All right. final word with you, Karen. Overall, you think India deserved to win it? Overall?
Yeah, I think obviously unbeaten in the tournament, so definitely they deserve to win it. The two teams that went to the finals were unbeaten up until that point in time. So it was obviously a matter of best team on the day, and obviously India managed to pull it off. I'm just more concerned about, I guess, why our two best T20 grounds in the Caribbean, probably Saint Kitts and Grenada, didn't host any of the matches.
Oh, interesting. Saint Kitts and Grenada.
You know?
That's interesting. Maybe they didn't have the money. Did they do a bit?
I mean, I don't think it even should come down to a process of them having to bid. I think that CWA should allocate who they want based on obviously knowing it's a world tournament. But that's about my pay grade. Really.
All right, good. Well, we're going to certainly have that discussion again sometime. It's been a pleasure. Have you, Dr. Mehta? Beautiful to have you in the country. Of course, Basil Butcher, great. Dr. Ford, Eddie, I bet he's saying he didn't make any money at all. Oh, my golly, I'm so sorry about that. I really hope that next time he makes some money. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a buy tomorrow. It's good night. Say what you want, PSA is the best shot at me.